Good day, and welcome to episode 134 of the Nerd Extravaganza podcast, where we celebrate gaming in all its forms. I'm Tom.
I'm Brian.
I'm Chris.
And I'm Cam.
And this week, on the heels of last week's episode with Dr. Steve Finn, we'll be discussing an interesting topic he sort of alluded to, which was the relative waxing and waning of video and tabletop gaming. But before we predict the future of both tabletop and video gaming, we will kick things off in a usual extravaganza style with our weekly geekly, geekly weekly update. Brian, why don't you kick things off? What have you been up to, man?
I can't get away from tabletop gaming lately. The only thing I have to report is one of my Kickstarters came in, so it looks like Yardmaster Express will be on the table soon.
Man, Brian, yours came in. Mine, I'm still waiting on mine. I'm jealous.
Oh, yeah, I got it like Friday, I think?
Okay, could you two humor me and tell me what Yardmaster Express is?
It's a train game. It's a mini version of... I'm surprised you haven't heard of Yardmaster, actually. That's a little bit more popular than this one.
Okay, well, I mean, I used to do a lot of train games back in the day, all the way back to, I can't remember the name of it. The one where you actually had to write on the board with crayon to put down your track. That was a classic for a long time before the new, you know, wave of train board games came out.
Well, this one's actually a card game, Chris. It's not like a Ticket to Ride type thing. It's like a card game where you're trying to match up cargo and different types of train cars and things like that.
Brian, this wouldn't be like one of the games we played at a game night a while ago where you were linking up various car types, would it?
Similar. It is not the same. That was Station Master.
Ah, yes. Cool. So you got that in, you said?
Yep.
Have you busted it out, looked at it much?
I have not. Nope. I'll save that for Cam can read the book and tell us how to play.
Awesome. If I ever get my copy.
Anything else, Brian?
I'm very happy to report that I got to play X-Wing again.
Ah.
I was beginning to think that would never happen.
Yes, at our latest game night, if I recall.
You are correct. One of our friends, and a relative newcomer to the game night, Tony, I think picked up the game recently, and that was one of his learning games, but he's kind of got it down, so... I think he's ready for prime time.
Cool, yeah, I was pleased to see that being played, although I did not partake. It's good to know that scene is alive and well. That was kind of one of the core missions of our game night early on, and then we kind of diverge into sort of across-the-board more general gaming, which I also don't mind, but that's awesome, man.
Yeah, I enjoy that game a lot. It's nice to play the more casual, more relaxed tabletop stuff on occasion, but every once in a while I do miss the hours-long epic battles.
Yeah, man. Definitely good stuff. And what else you got going on? Anything?
That is all I have.
Okay. Pretty tabletop-centric, as you implied. And now, Chris, what about you, man?
Well, speaking of X-Wing, I actually taught a new guy how to play Attack Wing, which is basically X-Wing's D&D cousin, I guess. Dungeons & Dragons cousin. Basically, instead of Starfighters, you're doing dragons. And there's some, you know, differences, such as when two starships are trying to collide, usually they just try to avoid each other and can't do anything other than maybe attack somebody else for the turn. But no, when dragons clash together, then they just start clawing at each other.
That makes sense.
I guess I did the right thing because I did it the right way, because when I was done, the guy went and he bought a copy.
Oh, very cool. So you're kind of an unofficial salesman for the game.
Yes. Well, it was really easy to buy a fourth dragon and then basically get all of them together to do around the same point value. And then I've got it down into separate little packages. I can just pop it open and I can play a quick four-person game in a heartbeat.
Nice. I wanted to ask you something about that game, actually, Chris. I'm pretty sure on the shelf at the Adventure Game Store, I saw some supplementary units for it that were not dragons. Was I seeing things, or is that...
No. They actually have squads. You know, one of the main complaints people have when they're just playing with the dragons is that it's like a basic dogfighting game. And when you only have one unit on the board for each side, and there's a lot of space for dancing and there's not as much interaction. So definitely getting troops into the game is a good thing. It's going to put a lot more things on the board. They can shoot and fire at each other, and it's going to be you know, a much more interactive experience. But yeah, the big thing for them is it uses the same movement system, but you base it on the sergeant of the unit to do the maneuvers. And of course, they're not flying. Their maneuvers are just on the ground only.
Oh, awesome. So, Brian, only a matter of time before we see AT-ATs in X-Wing.
I would love that.
Me too. Me too. It would be cool.
The other thing I did is Amazon had a sale on the Lock and Key series, a comic book series done by Joe Hill, who is a great horror writer. So, and I've been reading this series, and I love it so far.
Very cool, man. Okay, Cam, that brings it around to you, man. What's been going on?
Well, Tom, wasn't that eventful for me this weekend. I had a bunch of family obligations, had a wedding to go to. They planned it for this weekend because it was 12, 13, 14 on Saturday, being the date, that is. Obviously, like you said, gaming, did a lot of that at the Adventure Game Store. My copy of DC Deck Building Forever Evil finally came in. Got a chance to play that. Great game, loved it. On our site, we talked about doing a video review, so the listeners can look for that. Interestingly, I got in a copy of a prototype game that a Kickstarter company has asked us to review. It's called Good Cop, Bad Cop. That's actually the name of the original game. They're coming out with an expansion on Kickstarter in January called Good Cop, Bad Cop, Bombers and Traitors. And it's a fun type of like deduction party game for up to 8 players where you can see who's a good cop, see who's a bad cop, who's a traitor, who's crooked. The original game is really fun, and I'm really looking forward to trying out this new demo expansion set. And that's about it for me.
It's going to be a busy Thursday.
Absolutely.
So no Game of Thrones then?
We might be able to fit in some Game of Thrones.
As I mentioned at game night, and I guess this finally brings it around to me, I liked Game of Thrones. Probably more of a Saturday morning, just had my coffee affair than late at night. Because, man, I really want to play it again. I want to play Dorne. I really think I can, like, march out of Dorne and take Westeros. But not late at night for some reason.
Yeah, you need all your mental faculties.
Yeah, without a doubt. Yeah, I played it way too safe and didn't get anywhere with that game. But anyway, that was from last week, so I won't get into that for this week's update. Let's see, this week, I started my vacation, my winter wonderland, until like the beginning of January vacation. And I'm enjoying that so far. Been really trying to blow through the Kingdom Hearts HD Remix collection on the PlayStation 3. I know I mention that all the time because I'm constantly working on it because I got the new collector's edition for the HD Remix Part 2 in the mail, and I kind of want to play that. And that was a really good prelude to my trip to Disney. As we record this, I am at a hotel on Disney property on my second day of my little mini vacation up here, and I'm having a great time.
We're all jealous that you're up in Disney and we're down here like schlubs.
It's good times. I'm kind of a Disney fan. It comes up from time to time in my updates, and it has come up in episodes. But yeah, it's good stuff. I love being here. I don't know. It's like being in a form of virtual reality that's real but not real, and I really dig that. I mean, even more than the individual rides, just the sense of place is incredible to me.
Escapism is always a good thing. Until it's not, right?
Right, until it becomes a problem. And I will say this, Disney is full of cautionary tales for escapism gone overboard, and they come in human form. Often rolling. I'll leave it at that.
Well, for me, I mean, Disney fascinates me just how they've designed the whole place to manipulate crowds and audiences.
Yeah, you can slice it a thousand different ways, Chris, and it's just intriguing. It really is a marvel of architecture, of engineering, of I don't know how else to put it, of just ingenuity. And the fact that we live in a place in one of very few countries who are fortunate enough to spend so extravagantly on entertainment is not lost on me when I'm in these parks.
You know, I read a book a long time ago, back in the early 90s, called Vinyl Leaves. Walt Disney World in America, and it's just it compares and contrasts Disney and basically America, and it's really interesting. I mean, they came up with the name of the book is Vinyl Leaves because, of course, there are almost no real trees in Disney. You know, you go up to the trees and they're vinyl. And just basically, it's an amazing survey just from top to bottom as to the greeters and how they're trained and, you know, how the lines work and how they're meant to, like, keep you feel like you're moving all the time when really, you know, so you don't notice the time passing. And it's a really interesting read.
Oh, I'll have to check that out. Vinyl Leaves, you say?
Yep.
Oh, I'll have to check that out. That would be interesting to me for sure. Thanks for the mention.
Not a problem.
I will mention one last thing. I have been watching a cartoon series as I've been hanging out in my hotel at night called Over the Garden Wall, which is a series, I think, that just may have finished its first season run on the Cartoon Network. It's pretty cool, and I think it's appropriate for this podcast. It involves two brothers lost in a mysterious enchanted forest trying to find their way home. It's got, like, semi-intelligent frogs, talking horses, crazy woodsmen, undead having jack-o'-lantern parties. It's got a lot going for it, and I highly recommend it to anybody interested in sort of a whimsical fantasy story, I guess. So Over the Garden Wall, check it out.
Yeah, Elijah Wood does the voice for that, right?
Yes, actually, that is true. I did a little research because I was so curious about it. And yes, one of the voices, the older brother with the cone kind of dunce hat on. And then the younger brother walks around with a tea kettle on his head for some reason. I think maybe just to look cute. There's probably some deeper symbolism that I'm missing. Brian, who actually, well, I don't know. I would defer to maybe at least two of the people on the show to read deeper into whatever symbolism may be there. But we can discuss that in a future episode after you all watch it and love it, and then we can have a whole episode devoted to it. I'm sure you'll love it. But, yeah, that pretty much concludes my update, and I think frees us up to get into news. News extravaganza. So, guys, tell me, what's happening in our nerdy, nerdy world?
Well, this is the season for Christmas specials, and here's a new one for me. I don't know if you guys have heard about it. Were you aware that a small group of scrappy hackers saved Christmas for all video gamers?
Really?
What?
Nope.
Mm-mm.
I find it so funny. Hacking is constantly in the news lately, and the multitude of stories, some are easy to get buried. Apparently, the Lizard Squad has made threats to online gaming on Christmas Day. Like, we will take down Xbox Live, we will take down PlayStation Network, no one's going to be able to play their new video games, and we're going to ruin all these, you know, young, bright-eyed kids' Christmas. So, a group of hacker superheroes got together and doxed every single Lizard Squad member.
What? That's great.
And the FBI just went around, hey, thanks, guys, for doing all the work. We're going to go arrest these guys.
Oh, nice.
I don't blame them, but some of them said, yeah, thank you for the thanks. Can I have a job?
Cyber snitching at its best.
That kind of pleases me to learn. Not in any small part because, Brian, as you know, we've got a beef with those guys for screwing up our Twitch episode we did several episodes ago.
I'd like to point out, too, that at the time we did predict that they would break the law for a while and screw things up and then get arrested and, you know, everybody who they tried to hurt would still be here, so I take particular pleasure recording this episode knowing that they're in jail.
Same here. The prescience of the Nerdstravaganza once again shines. So, any other news? That's great. That's joyous pre-holiday news, Brian. Anything else?
I want to see next year we can do the Christmas special Grumpy Cat and the, I don't remember their name, but the superhero hackers save Christmas.
I like it.
And maybe like Spike or Sci-Fi can do it instead of Lifetime or...
Grumpy Cat's their mascot. They're called Grumpy Squad. Awesome. That is heartwarming holiday goodness. It's almost like a drink in a warm cup of spiked eggnog. Although, wait, is eggnog supposed to be served warm? I think maybe not.
Room temperature-ish.
Okay. Anyway,
and alcoholic.
Yes, maybe that's where the warmth comes from, but it definitely is giving me an eggnoggy feeling.
Yeah, the more alcohol, the more room temperature it should be.
Okay. Good to know. I like eggnog, but I know nothing about it. Anyway, anything else, Brian? That was pretty good.
That's everything for me.
Excellent. Is this going to be our pre-holiday episode? Are we going to get one out before then, or is this pretty much it?
This releases on the 23rd, and the one after that releases on the 30th.
All right, commence with the puns, because you'll never believe.
You'll never believe?
Yes. How disappointed our audience gets when we forget the holidays.
No way.
Ah, ouch. I'm going to deck you, Chris.
Oh, actually. I'm sorry.
Oh, God. All right. So that concludes the news.
Oh, you forgot about me.
Oh, sorry. Did you have news too, Cam?
I do have news.
Sorry. I don't want to get coal from Santa. Please.
I got a few things. I'll just throw them out and see if you guys want to discuss. McDonald's, speaking of American institutions like Disney, as we did a little bit earlier in the episode, McDonald's, another American institution, whether we like it or not, is running out of fries in Japan because of a West Coast strike. Japan is not getting their French fries and they're up in arms. I don't know if that's exactly geek related, but I love Japan, so...
It's got junk food in Japan. You're good.
Yeah. I think Japan in general falls within our wheelhouse. So yes.
Yes, absolutely. The U.S. Navy has created a robotic tuna to spy on our fellow nations. So if you see a tuna in the water, it might just be spying on you. Tom, I know you're a huge Destiny fan. Well, I know you're. I know you play Destiny. I don't know how much of a fan you are. If you have a modded console, I would unmod it or disconnect it, because apparently Bungie is going to start banning users with modded consoles. And that brings me to Sony, which I typically pick on every week. We've talked over the last few weeks about how they've been hacked so many times and all the leaks and, you know, everything that's gone into what they've done. And apparently they're trying to poison torrent swarms now in order to contain the data leaks, which... I'm sure, you know, anyone who knows anything knows doesn't work. It's like sticking a finger in the, you know, in a dike, and I'm not being perverted. you know, you plug up a couple leaks and four more spring out, you know. So they're continuing to fight their losing battle against the hackers, trying vainly to poison the torrents. Samsung is manufacturing their Apple A9 processors for the iPhone 7. So Apple geeks and fanboys, rejoice. And I don't know if you guys saw this, but seems like Facebook might actually add a dislike button.
Oh, which, finally.
Yeah, which has always been called for. And seems like that might be coming to the next update. And that's all I got.
That's a bundle of news. I mean, I've got something to say about all of it, but I think the dislike button is something I've been waiting for a while.
Yeah, I mean, like, you know, someone posts, like, my grandma just died, and, like, 30 people like it. I still don't understand that.
Grandma was a bitch.
She must have been.
Well, my question is how is that going to impact all of the political garbage you get on Facebook?
I would assume it's going to drum up some dislikes.
Maybe some people will finally get a clue.
Another tidbit of news that stands out to me, I had no idea that people were modifying their next-gen consoles already. That seems like kind of a pricey gadget to tinker with this early in the life cycle.
I think from day one they've been modding. It just seems to be the thing to do. I mean, I personally don't do that, but I know a few people who do, and hopefully they won't get the ban hammer.
Yeah, I mean, there's worse things to be banned from than Destiny, but I guess if you're into it, that sucks.
Yeah. And especially if you've, you know, spent money on the mod or done, you know, put the time in anyway. It's
well, some people, that's just their natural inclination. They got a fiddle or something.
Yeah.
I'm not knocking it. I mean, everybody's got their hobby.
No, you're right. I mean, and I know there's a lot of black box thinking that goes into consumer electronics. And this past summer, I actually fixed a bunch of stuff going on with my laptop, and Apple they're very guilty of sort of engendering that black box feel, even with their computers. And it doesn't necessarily need to be the case. You should kind of have familiarity with your electronics. I'm not so sure about circumventing copyright and stuff, but still.
Yeah, I mean, look, if you've paid for the game, I mean, you know, what you do with it after that, I have no issue with.
Yeah, I kind of, as long as you're acquiring the rights legally, I'm kind of cool too. And speaking of acquiring legally or not, it sounds like Sony's trying to like prevent the bank robbers who've already robbed their bank from like spending the money by
closing every store in the world, basically.
Right. By trying to get exactly.
Yeah, it's like, all right, you got our money, but you can't ever spend it because we're going to close every store or
right.
shut down the internet, so you can't, you know, buy anything.
Yeah, there you go. That thereby like pissing off everybody else who might like to shop at those stores. So, right.
Exactly. Sounds like Sony.
Not a good PR move. Not a good PR move, Sony.
It's one after the other with them, unfortunately.
So it seems. Wow. What a bundle of news, as I said. Very well done, guys. And I don't have any. I like just listening to what you guys report and commenting. And I believe Chris has said he's kind of dry this week. So, with that said, I think we can segue somewhat awkwardly, and I apologize for that, into tonight's topic. Which is sort of a follow-on to something the good doctor mentioned last week, which is that there, at least in his estimation, there's a sort of retraction in video gaming in terms of its popularity, maybe its cultural influence. I don't know if there's empirical data to back that up, but we'll just go with his observation for the sake of conversation. And a corresponding, or at least a coincident, increase in the popularity of tabletop gaming. And so I thought we would discuss that tonight, what we think about that, whether we think that they're in any way correlated. So I'll open up the floor. Who wants to say something first?
I know this is a terrible sample size, but through my own experience, I can kind of see it, because as a lot of video games became more antisocial or unsocial, I enjoy playing games with people in person much more. I think everybody knows I've been playing Final Fantasy a lot lately. And once upon a time, the thing I liked about MMOs was all of the neat people you could meet and get to know. And there's people I met in EverQuest in 1999 that I still consider friends, but that's just gone. I mean, there's more venues to communicate with people than ever before, and they're all meaningless. I'm in a free company. I'm in like 5 link shells. I have a friends list, and I don't do anything with any of them.
That's a shame. So video gaming for you has lost its personal feeling it had.
Warcraft started it with the dungeon queues, and now I guess it's just a staple, because Final Fantasy has the duty finder. You get in a queue for whatever you want to do, and then you go off on solo for a bit, and eventually the computer puts together a capable group. And reputations don't matter, because you'll probably never see the guy again. He may not even be on your server, so he can be an asshole and take all the loot and anything. I don't know, it just kind of brings out the worst. And even people that you may be friendly with, they don't, there's no more, hey guys, can you help me? Because there's an infinite amount of other people waiting to help them because they need it too. So it's not even like you can rely on your friends, or you need to rely on your friends anymore. If you happen to meet someone and they don't steal your loot and run off with it, or...
Okay, so point taken. The anonymity and the necessary, I guess, human separation that results in, or that results from online gaming, or is a inseparable part of online gaming, doesn't do a lot to make it feel like you're gaming with other humans, right? They could as easily be passively intelligent robots.
Yeah, they could easily be NPCs or bots, or... Well, bots might be better.
Sociopathic robots at that, in some cases. What do you guys think of Brian's views, guys?
Brian, I'm right there with you. I mean, and I'll take it a step further. I mean, even outside of video gaming, I mean, it's like, you know, we're so closely linked now in terms of technology, but we're even further apart in terms of just humanity. You know, you go into a restaurant or a Starbucks and not one person is talking to each other. You know, they're all either on a laptop or on their phone or, you know, texting or, you know, whatever they're doing. And they're not having conversations. And that's what I like about the tabletop gaming is that, you know, we sit down, we shoot the shit, we play a game, we have a good time. And yeah, we may check our phones here and there, but we're concentrating on something. And, you know, we're all, you know, if we're playing a co-op game, we're working together. If we're not, we're working against each other, but it's all in good fun and we're having a good time together rather than sitting staring at a screen somewhere and maybe having some loose, you know, association with another person, you know, on the other end of the wire. And I know personally, you know, my work, I work for myself. So, you know, most of my interaction during the week is, you know, either on the computer or on the phone or, you know, on my phone or texting or whatever, emails. So I like to get out and sit down with other real humans and, you know, do something rather than just sit on the computer and, you know, bang away.
I've had insomnia issues for most of my life, and I just do not sleep during regular hours. I'm usually up till 5 a.m., 6 a.m., and once upon a time, the internet was good for that because people were interesting, and now it is just a hellish purgatory of nothing to engage your mind.
Right.
So, especially our Thursday night group, when we do run long until 4 a.m. or 5 a.m. some nights, you cannot replace that. I cannot get that anywhere else. It's great.
Yeah, those are good times. And, you know, the other thing, too, that sort of springs to mind is that, you know, the games and experiences that we have on Thursday night, you know, they're never the same. It's not, you know, we can play the same game 4 weeks in a row and get a different outcome every single time and have a different experience. Whereas I feel like in a lot of these games, and I'm not going to pick, you know, I don't mean to pick on first person shooters, but like Halo and Call of Duty, things like that. It's just, you know, queue, get in a game, kick ass or try to kick ass, get your ass kicked, get, you know, pwned, get teabagged, and then, you know, yell, scream, break your controller, and or, you know, repeat, basically. And it's the same, it's almost the same exact thing over and over again. And I think that while video game developers have tried to increase the art and increase the cutscenes and cinematics and stuff of video games, I don't think that there's anything that will ever, that they can make that will ever compare to sitting down and playing an RPG with your friends with a pen and a paper and creating your own rich, layered world and character that you can then use and, you know, move forward in a world that you guys all create together.
Yeah, but the trick of getting somebody together for an RPG all at the same time is, especially when you're an older person, is just, it's almost like moving mountains, unfortunately.
Right, but you know, it's funny how it's almost a paradox because you can go on the internet and find people that are willing to do that. You know, you can go on to Meetup or you can go on to wherever, you know, social networking sites and find people of like-minded interest and then get together in real life and actually do that.
I think Tom and I have relevant experience. We're coming up on about 1 year for our gaming night, and Tom, the first, 3 months, who was there?
That would be you and I. Oh, yeah, I was there as well. So we were there.
We were the only two attending. And last week we had, 20 people there? 5 different games at the same time? Like,
oh, yeah. It overflowed the back
room. Like, we're having spillover into like the rest of the store about every other time we do them.
Yeah.
Which is, honestly, guys, exactly what we wanted at the outset. I couldn't be more pleased. And I really forget how much I appreciate the face-to-face social interaction. Of course, you're going to occasionally attract a bad egg who doesn't really play well with others. But for the most part, it's cool to meet new people. It's cool to interact. It's cool to play games. And it's really weird that face-to-face contact is...
Well, I don't think so. I don't think it's weird. Now, whether or not, you know, this sort of trend of putting the video game to the side and playing a board game has really impacted the video game industry, I'm not so sure about that, but I think it's a combination of things. Being, you know, on the computer all day, especially if you're not 12 years old and you can't get out of the house, you know. And then also, I think it's just, you know, more and more people are getting into families and it's something to do together.
Yeah, and I think we can, because as I said, we don't really have empirical evidence to back this up, but we probably could go out searching for some. I think we can steer the conversation into toward perception. Do we share the perception that our guest last week had that board gaming is on the rise because it offers something that maybe video gaming does not? And I'm not sure I want to say that's the case, mainly because of my love for video gaming. But maybe. I definitely get something out of face-to-face gaming that I don't get out of, I'll just say, being online. And that's sad because the internet in general, and video games in particular, as Brian alluded to when mentioning EverQuest, in their early days, as a popular way of connecting, provided a sort of intimacy. And you met interesting people and you really got to know them. If I had to point the finger of blame to anything for taking that away, it would be towards oversaturation. You've got so much social media out there. You've got so many options when it comes to online gaming. I mean, what is the internet? It's a way to just like overexpose yourself and to be completely inundated with information about people, as opposed to the old days where you composed thoughtful emails back and forth and you were corresponding with people who were, just interesting, I'll say.
Right. Well, also, Tom, I think too, you know, the rise of Bitcoin and the monetization of these games and the loot that can be purchased in the games mined or created or however it may come about, I think also had a huge effect, because it went from a group of like-minded individuals getting together and playing to play together towards a common goal and in achieving something in the game, to a bunch of people just like Brian said, out for themselves, trying to get all the loot and figure out, you know, what they can do with it on their own, rather than, you know, being a part of a guild or, you know, a party.
Well, how far back do you want to go? I mean, if we go back to Ultima Online, that was one of the big changes that happened. Was at first, I thought it was kind of ironic. It was about a world and being heroes, and within months it was being taken over by everybody acting like bandits, and that's why they threw in a reputation system, well, so you could see who was being an ass and who wasn't.
Right.
But, I mean, you know, I think part of it is when you're younger, maybe for those who didn't grow up with Facebook already, you know, ooh, I'm meeting somebody from Japan for the first time. That's awesome.
Right.
Now, not so much. It's just a daily thing.
Now you scream at them for having poor English skills.
Everyone nowadays is their own personal rock star, right? The online hero of their own narrative, right? So when take, again, the social networks and look at what video games have borrowed from them. You're basically showing off all the time, right? Look at all these badges and trophies and kills and achievements that I got. Check me out. Games have really incorporated that stuff. And at a certain point, I mean, is that fun to be around a bunch of anonymous braggarts all the time?
Yeah. And you know, it's all marketing. I mean, you know, studies have shown that, you know, those incentives just drive people nuts. And I mean, you know, the proof is in the pudding. But, you know, who cares, you know, what achievements you've unlocked. And, I mean, I personally don't, but a lot of people do. And it just, it feeds itself.
Well, for me, my main concern with the microtransaction stuff is it's slowly evolving to the point where, for humans, we like to click on things. That's why they think internet addiction can be an addiction, is because you want to explore. You one click and you find something new. But now it's getting to the point where Las Vegas is looking into casual games and vice versa as ways of, like, you know, pushing those buttons and getting a little bit of, you know, money, which over 2 or 3 million people ends up being a lot of money.
Right. Well, and, you know, Tom, you brought it up last week when we were talking about Dr. Finn's philosophy. I mean, that's the beauty of tabletop gaming. We're sitting there and, well, you know, most of us, hopefully, are sitting there playing just for the sheer social aspect and fun of it. There's no money on the line. There's no, you know, if you lose, so what? You know, the world's not going to end. You're not going to lose your house payment, you know, whereas, you know, the monetization of these games and you know, Chris, as you alluded to, actual gaming, you know, a la Las Vegas and other casinos coming in is just turning it into a business where you do have stuff on the line and self-interest takes over, you know, most of the time, but especially when money's on the line, and it just creates a totally different dynamic than if you're just sitting around with buddies playing a game.
Can we all wear stupid hats Thursday night and tell people there are achievement rewards?
That's a good idea, actually.
You showed up. Congratulations.
You know, and Chris, back to your point of the video game industry, you know, taking a dent from the tabletop industry. Yeah, you know, I don't know that they need to be mutually exclusive. I think that I know personally, I do both. You know, and I think that we'll probably find that a lot. You have people that play video games a lot, but also tabletop game a lot. Now, what is the, is there a quantifiable number in terms of how much I'm tabletop gaming now as opposed to, you know, 5 years ago, compared to how much I was gaming, video gaming back then and now? I don't know. I would say that I definitely tabletop game more now than I did, you know, 5-10 years ago where I was video gaming more. But I still think there's room, there's more than enough room for both, because I think they overlap in so many ways.
Well, here's the real question, Cam. How much are you doing tabletop on the video game?
In terms of what?
Well, like playing, like Days of Wonder is a company that offers almost all of their board games on an online format or an electronic format.
Oh, no. I would say almost zero. I don't play any tabletop games that I own or that are in my rotation of playing on like my phone or on a video game system.
But you can do that, but you don't.
You can, but to me it's almost like, at that point, it's like words with friends. You know, who cares? Like, I don't care about, you know, playing Scrabble with someone, you know, across the country. You know, maybe I'll play with my friends that I know and that I talk to on a daily basis, but I'm not going to, you know, I'd rather sit down with someone and play and shoot the shit rather than, you know, just play against some bot or faceless person that, you know, I have no idea, I've never met before.
Brian?
The only tabletop game that I play as a video game is Star Realms.
Oh, I didn't know that was available.
Oh, yeah. It's a great app, actually. I highly recommend that for anyone trying to learn the game, just because there are some things that aren't perfectly clear in the rules book. And it's coded very well. It's very, very by the book. So it's great to learn. But I never even considered. There's an option to play online. And I was just like, nah, oh, I'm good. If I want to do that, I'll just call a friend and, you know, meet at Denny's. And
well, plus two, Brian, the AI on that is really good as well. It's pretty tight, the AI on Star Realms. That would be my one exception too, Chris.
Uh-huh. What about you, Tom?
I don't play any tabletop games online, although when I was super excited about Crossmaster, having played and done some demos of it at PAX this past summer, I was given the screen handle of one of the guys who works for the company and promotes it. And I don't remember that gentleman's title for the life of me at the moment. But he advised me that if I wanted to get good at the game, I needed to play online. Because basically, like, it's the miniatures game online, to the point where you're even, like, moving the miniature, like, representations of the miniatures around. It's not, like, animated or video gamey in that sense. He said, like, playing that a lot and getting ranked at that really helps you with playing the board game. And you can play match after match, obviously, because there's no setup. You just get going. So if I really wanted to get serious about Crossmaster, I could see myself playing that as a supplement to the tabletop experience. Because I've tried to get us to play that, and there's a lot of setup involved. And Brian has pointed out, probably correctly on a couple of occasions, that you kind of have to devote an evening to Crossmaster if you want to play it. So, to answer your question, Chris, I could see myself playing as a supplement and to, as Brian did with Star Realms, to aid me in the understanding of the rules and execution of the game. Not so much as a replacement, and probably certainly not as a primary and equally fulfilling experience.
Yeah, for me, I actually did the opposite. About a month or two ago, I played Golem Arcana, which is a board game, miniature game like Crossmaster, but it comes with, you have to have a tablet to play it, because it has an electronic app that helps
yes.
you
You don't even have to know the rules. You just know where to point this on your fig, point where you want to go, point somewhere on the fig or its card to do an attack, and then point to where you want your target to be. So that was, you know, to the point where I wondered why we even had to have the board game to some degree. But, I mean, it was nice to have that sort of tactile feel. And, of course, you're not playing online. Your opponent is also using his magical wand, which is a Bluetooth micro reader, I think. How they do that trick is they just micro print little QRS codes all over the map and the label of the fig, even though you can't see them. And it picks up on those.
Yeah, Chris, you bring up something that I, you know, is interesting to me. I'm not a fan of Golem Arcana. I've seen it played. I've tried to play it. It's, I don't know. I just feel like it's a gimmick in a lot of ways. You know, and I really hate things that are just added just as a gimmick rather than something that's functional and practical. I think there's potential there for something to be pretty cool. But I don't think it's there yet, certainly not for me to invest the money into the system. But I do really like the apps that are coming out lately for the games. Like, you know, you and I have played Seven Wonders several times and used the Seven Wonders app to score. That's super helpful. I really like that. One Night Werewolf is a game we all love to play, and we play quite often. And that app is phenomenal. And I can't wait for the expansion for that to come out. Because they've already updated the app for One Night Werewolf to include all the new roles and stuff like that that got unlocked on the Kickstarter campaign. So I'm a big fan of that, but just adding and throwing on, you know, bells and whistles onto what is just really just a regular skirmish or you know, miniature board game to give it like a tech feel, I wasn't a fan of.
Oh yeah, I understand. I mean, Werewolf, you almost don't even have to teach the game. You can just give people kind of an idea of what they're doing as an activity. Yeah. And then you run the app, and the app does it, you know, all for you.
Yeah, it's genius. It's absolute genius.
I remember we tried to do Ultimate Werewolf with someone kind of trying to teach us and do what the app does, and it was a good contrast. Let's just put it
that. Let me ask you guys something, because you've sort of got me thinking now as I consider Golem Arcana. Or Golem Arcana, or however you pronounce it, depending on where you're from. How would you guys feel about, / how would you classify the virtual figures game from Star Wars that they played on the Millennium Falcon? Like, let's say they came out with something like that, where you had a board that just projected your pieces, but they weren't really there. They weren't. There, you didn't have the tactile experience, but you still have the face-to-face interaction. It's essentially a video game. How would you feel about that? And what? I guess I'm trying to put my finger on what's more important, the tactile feel or the social interaction. I suspect I know the answer. It seems obvious as I ask the question, but what do you think about that?
I think something that Golem Arcana lost was the flow, because you kind of had to do everything twice, because you did have to move your miniature, and then you had to tell the app that you moved your miniature. It had the textile, but not really. I don't know. It just felt very, very strange. And I think going either way, I think I would play like I think they call it pass and play, where I would play Golem Arcana. I would just hand you the tablet, and then you would make your moves, and you'd hand it back to me, and I would make my moves. I think that would be fun in person. Or I think it would be fun, almost like the Millennium Falcon, but maybe if the app sensed where you move the actual physical pieces, instead of you having to do that and then tell it you did. Like, maybe use like a camera system to read the QR codes from afar.
Or maybe some sort of sensor, so that when you moved it physically with your hand, it just automatically updated the app, like through Bluetooth or something like that.
Exactly.
Or updated the tablet.
That would make a huge difference.
Yeah, because you're right. And that's sort of what I was getting at with, you know, the practicality standpoint. It's completely impractical to have to go through the motions twice and then go to the tablet and update the tablet as to what you did. And it just seemed like a big hassle to me to play a game that you could just use plastic miniatures for.
And I think presentation is part of it too. I mean, especially for Gollum Arcana, you got the feeling as you double-clicked on everything, it gave you all the information and all the same sort of information all over again. And again, where if you were starting to try to get a level of mastery with it, you didn't want to see that stuff. You wanted to actually go through the rules and kind of figure it in your head. So, I mean, you know, to the point where it would be like moving figures instead of, like, being told at every step of the way, I have 97% here, 86% there. Well, I want to, you know, I don't need to know that information if I just want to hurry up and get it done because I just want to hit this guy.
Well, you know, presentation is an interesting point. I mean, now if you moved them and then when you updated the tablet, they did some sort of cool move or shot, you know what I mean? Like, you were talking about, Tom, you know, when the big guy goes and crushes the other guy, you know, that would be pretty cool, you know, because it gives you more of a in-depth feel of something happening in the game. But I mean, if you're just sliding a figure and then updating your tablet, I mean, what's the point? But if it was moving and doing something cool after you did that, then maybe I could see it, you know, having an appeal.
So a different execution, a more elegant execution on that concept sounds like something you might not have object to, and if I'm reading your guys' collective response correctly, you don't mind a video gamey supplementary feature in a tabletop game, but you're not as long as it's not gimmicky, and I guess you're not really looking for you're not looking for one of those sit down arcade machines. Essentially, you still want a tabletop experience with meaningful technical enhancements, let's say, that really enhance the game rather than just exist.
I have no problem whatsoever introducing tech into, you know, a paper or, you know, standalone tabletop game. But my problem is introducing it just for the sake of, you know, a gimmick. Now, I would love, like, say you're playing a game that's fairly involved, like Game of Thrones, or, you know, even, you know, a lighter game like Seven Wonders or something like that. Like, if you had some sort of heads-up display that was, like, tracking your movements, or, you know, for yourself, not that other people could see, but that you could see, so that you know, okay, well, or, like, you know, maybe Splendor. All right, I've gotten, you know, this many rubies, and the likelihood of another ruby coming up is this much. You know, something like that that could give you, like, real-time information as you play the game that could affect your strategy. I think that would be, you know, I would love to have something like that. But, you know, I don't know how you guys come down on that. Do you think it's, like, taking the fun out of the game?
This might be a bit too much of a stretch, and you may not be able to relate to it because I know it was a small community that did it. But Tom will recall when we worked together, and pretty much all the cool kids at the job got together on Friday night and just used the conference table as a video gaming platform.
As a tabletop gaming platform or video gaming?
We did both, but video gaming.
Oh, yeah, we did. Yeah, that's right. We had a PlayStation. That's right.
Well, we had, too, a GameCube. And I think Cam's idea of a personal HUD did very well in the form of using your Game Boys as a controller.
Huh. Yeah, that's interesting.
Because everybody looked at the television, and everybody saw what was going on, but you still had your personal little screen. I think it was Game Boy SP back then. And you still had direct control over sub-menus and things like that.
Isn't that what the Wii 2 kind of evolved into?
Eh, that's only one controller, though. I don't think it's even possible to have four on that. So yes, but they dicked it up. what was that Final Fantasy game?
That was Crystal Chronicles.
So Crystal Chronicles had that, like, exactly right. Like you're trying to describe it. It was four players in one room, so there was none of this internet anonymity or anything like that. We were throwing things back and forth, and we were socializing. But it also had, you know, a little secrets on your screen. I think you could totally play Splendor that way.
Yeah. I mean, like, you know, I mean, and this is a very, like, rudimentary example, but almost sort of like when you watch, you know, poker on TV and they've got the percentages of what may come or what may not come, or hand strength, things like that. You know, if you're playing a card-based game, something like that, that would give you your relative hand strength as opposed to, you know, how many players there were, how many cards were out. or in like a miniatures game, you know, show, you know, give you all your relevant information with regard to your miniatures, and then maybe some sort of information as to possible, you know, reactions or movements, you know, that might be made by one of your opponents. I mean, I would love something like that just because I like to keep, you know, I try to keep that stuff together in my head, and, you know, sometimes it's just impossible unless you, you know, unless you're Stephen Hawking. But, you know, I think that would be pretty helpful. But then again, like I said, is that taking the fun out of the game and taking away a lot of the, I guess, competition?
I think it would be very interesting to play a game like Sheriff of Nottingham like this, where you could, instead of passing the pouch, put your pouch together on a iPhone or a pad or whatever, and then digitally pass it to the sheriff. Almost like a DM. But then that does make me ask, why bother?
Right. As you guys are mentioning these things, like, it's coming back to me, like, even in the HUD, a very well-realized HUD on a tablet or what have you, or handheld, you still have to move the piece, right, manually. So, like, since you're doing that anyway, what is the enhancement that comes with the e-solution, you know? Maybe for convenience, you know, in a card-based game, having them all there.
Well, a perfect example of that is a kind of fun little game I play occasionally called Card Hunter. I don't know if that rings a bell or not with anybody.
No.
Okay, so Card Hunter, the setup is that you're doing a fantasy dungeoneering group, and you're going through the dungeon, moving your piece along, and attacking something, but the actual attacks and everything are done as if you're doing a collectible card game. Every time you get a new piece of equipment, you get 5 or 6 new cards that do different things in your deck. And, I mean, a couple people that reviewed it, they said that the way that this is done in real life, it would be such a pain in the arse to have these decks and keep them separate and everything else. But since it's all electronic, Card Hunter makes it easy and quick because you don't have to, you know, it does the shuffling and everything for you. And then just as a side note, what's kind of cute about Card Hunter is that, yes, you're controlling an adventuring group, but the metagame is actually you are controlling your adventuring group in your GM's basement. And you're teenagers, and then, like, the story arc isn't really the adventure you're doing, but whether or not you're watching your DM have a crush on the pizza delivery girl.
That's cool.
Check it out. It's fun. It's gotten good reviews. It's very tactically driven. I had fun with it for a while, but I'm kind of an outlier when it comes to video games. I don't like doing a lot of online gaming. I like to do a lot more single-person experiences. And then for me, I mean, I play it for a while until it kicks my ass a little too often, and then I kind of move on to something else. I don't do this whole getting all my achievements and going all the way to the end. Very rarely. Very rarely.
Tom, in my HUD scenario, let's take a game like DC Deck Building, where,
yeah,
you know, you have a certain amount of total amount of victory points. And as you're acquiring and building your deck, you're building victory points. If you had a heads up display or some sort of HUD that showed you, and you're, you know, say maybe even like Google Glass, right? You had a Google Glass, pair of Google Glasses on, and it, you know, there were little RF strips or, you know, barcodes or whatever on each of the cards. So every time a card came out, it kept track of, you know, that card, and, you know, it knows already obviously how many of those card types are in the deck, how many victory points each one is worth. So when you acquired that card, it would increase your, you know, it would automatically keep count of your victory points. It would keep count of the cards that other players acquired. So you would know, okay, I'm at 40 victory points. Brian's at 39. Tom's at 42. And you could plot your strategy in terms of, okay, what cards are left? Am I going to go for Suicide Squad because I already have two of them, or there are no, you know, or lets me know there are no more Suicide Squads left in the deck, so I've got to shift my strategy to getting, you know, maybe passing off weaknesses to someone, things like that. You know, I feel like that would give you a ton of information that you sort of keep track of while you're playing the game, but, you know, you never really know until you finish and count up all the points.
I like that. I like an at-a-glance game state thing going on, so you know what's going on at the table around you. And that gets me thinking about an AR projection onto the game board, and that could apply to a lot of games. For example, in X-Wing, you could hold your tablet up and see exactly what ships are damaged. Maybe it even projects some little damage effect on really badly damaged ships. It also, I mean, maybe could even project out what moves are available. You know, what moves you can do. Maybe stopping short of advising you, because that might make you predictable or take the fun out of the game. But look, here are my turns. And might also do a lot in preventing careless mistakes. And to, again, step back to DC deck building, for example, because the villain that I was playing in the villains version we played last week had an ability where whenever you passed cards to the left, which is a strategy people employ to pass bum cards onto their opponents,
right.
I got to draw a card. Well, a little reminder of that fact might have helped.
Yeah.
So things like that, like as an aid, I could see a tablet or a phone really coming in handy, yeah.
I think it would have to be just a good balance between how much information is too much information, because a lot of games are built not to be perfect information games. I mean, chess is a perfect information game, but a lot of games aren't. And there's a reason why they kick people out of Las Vegas for card counting, because of that level of perfect information.
Right, but if you're all on a level playing field, then I feel like it's almost the same. You're just playing at a much higher level, I think, at that point.
Oh, yeah, it definitely closes the gap between what someone who's a newbie would be and then someone who's doing it all in their head as a more experienced player. And also, it would mean if you had something like that, you might have to kind of bring up the level of complexity in games to kind of keep people, even though they have more information, the depth of game might get deeper just to compensate to some degree.
Yeah. What do you think, Brian?
Especially with apps, there's an endless supply of customization and clickable options. So it may not affect player talent. A lot of people may not be able to process too much information. Some people may find too much information actually detrimental to their play. So they could scale it back a little bit. But I'm really intrigued with what you just mentioned, the level of play more talented individuals could rise to.
Well, I'm just thinking of like Magic. I mean, there's already people that are so uber and meta in that, you know, when playing Magic, and imagine if they had even more information. I mean, it would just be, I've seen some Magic games that are already out of control, and then, you know, you add some of that into it, and it's, I think it'd just take it to a whole new level.
Yeah. That's pretty tempting, intriguing, interesting. I'd like to see it.
Yeah, and, you know, if Google Glass ever gets made or perfected, maybe that's something they could incorporate.
Or it gets cheap.
Yeah.
It's a little too pricey for me right now.
It's a little too stupid for me right now.
Yeah, that's what I was going to say.
I don't know why on earth they didn't go with the Geordi visor.
That would be way cooler, because look, if I'm going to look like a geek, make me look like the king of geeks. You know, don't make me look like a guy trying to be cool.
Exactly, just go all the way.
right. Oh man, they should also have an audio companion to that thing that just looks like Vulcaneers. Let's just have it all done at once.
Just one giant headset, right? Just a...
Yes, exactly.
Oh man.
So I think what we've arrived at, guys, is that, well, it goes without saying that we're leaning pretty heavily towards tabletop here. I still play video games fairly regularly, but I would say lately I'm more consistently doing tabletop gaming because we have a devoted night, whereas with the video games I fit it in where I can. And I think that we don't really hate technology. We're not Luddites or anything, and we can even find a place for it in tabletop. So I suggest that when we develop our Ganzamancer game, a game of sorcery and intrigue, we incorporate some sort of AR enhancement or something like that so that tablets, phones, and Google Glass can all be used. What do you think?
Can't argue with that logic.
Yeah, might as well throw it in.
It would be so easy to have like a backlit board that would project the color of mana or something like that. That would be killer.
Yeah. Oh, I'm a sucker for backlit gemstones, as anybody who's seen me around the Seven Dwarves cart mine or whatever it's called right here at Disney will tell you. And I know we haven't gotten too in-depth about Gansomancer, but basically you control this pool of colored loveliness. And to have it glow would blow my mind. Maybe that's all it would take is a backlight, Brian.
Yeah, because I think you could have just like a divot and a colored light in it, and whatever light would shine. That's a different discussion.
Yes. Gansomancer.
Coming soon.
Coming soon. Cam, throw some like bulletproof legalese out.
Oh,
there.
Oh, yeah.
Steals our idea.
Patent pending, copyright pending, all rights reserved.
Right. Don't steal it.
My question is, your definition of coming soon, is that a Blizzard coming soon?
Yeah, probably.
Yeah.
Or a Marvel movie's coming soon, which means like every 5 minutes now.
We've got to put some more money into R&D, and we might get it out soon.
Kickstarter coming soon.
Well, you know, guys, I'm interested to know, you know, Tom, I know you're a huge video gamer, and I am too, but I have not yet, and I'm sad to say, I have not yet really fully adapted the new consoles. I mean, you know, I have one, and I play my Xbox 360 10 times more than I play the Xbox One.
I think the running internet meme now for consoles is, oh my god, I just got the new console, let's sit down and watch Netflix.
This being a discussion of video games as well as tabletop, this is a very appropriate thing to bring up, Cam. I got both consoles on launch day. I enjoyed some of the launch offerings on both. I am playing Destiny kind of half-heartedly on the Xbox One. Most of my game time right now is spent on the PS3. I play Final Fantasy. Well, I haven't played, but I was playing Final Fantasy 14 on there, and Kingdom Hearts. And so, yeah, it's weird. This next generation of consoles has not offered compelling enough content to suck me in. And I don't know if that is in any way indicative of a failing on the part of the games industry, or if this is just the typical next gen ramp up time. This seems to be taking longer. We're like in our second year now. I remember the Xbox 360 and the PlayStation 3 having a much better lineup and a lot more buy-in and traction by this time in their life cycle. So, I don't know, Cam, what do you think? Or anybody else that wants to weigh in?
No, I can't weigh in because I'm part of the PC master race and I'm still trying to get through my Steam list.
Well, I agree with you, Tom. I remember when my brother and I did the same thing with the previous generation that we did with this one. I got the Xbox, he got the actually we did it opposite. I got the PS3, he got the Xbox, and then this time I got the Xbox, he got the PS. I know I was kind of hacked off in the previous generation because it seemed like all the great games were coming out for Xbox and PlayStation had just the shittiest games, you know, and I was the one that got stuck with that console between my brother and I. Now it seems to have sort of flipped a little bit. I think there are probably better games out now for PlayStation than the Xbox. And again, once again, I got the shaft. But you know, like I said, I know for a fact though, even though there was that sort of initial lag in games on the PlayStation side, they caught up pretty quickly. And obviously, I mean, you know, if you just look back at the titles for Xbox, I mean, there's a million. I mean, I still have a stack of games sitting in front of my Xbox 360 that I've yet to play through that are all really great games. Whereas now I feel like it's much thinner, especially, and much further along.
Don't even remind me about my last gen backlog. I mean, it's kind of good that they're such laggards with getting this thing, this next gen off the ground, because I'm kind of catching up, but I have my work cut out for me in the last gen still.
I fire up my PlayStation 4 once a month religiously to download the new free games.
Yes, in case you want to play them someday.
And the last game that I actually played, I believe you gave me for my birthday in May.
Oh yeah, it was Infamous. Did you like that?
Yeah, it was fun. As fun as any video game is these days. I never finished it. Like, I enjoyed it, but it just kind of
petered out. Like,
yeah, that game was alright.
I was a huge fan of Infamous and the Crackdown type genre of games in the previous generation, but I feel like the newer ones have sort of fallen down a little bit.
Mm.
So I have you console gurus here. I just want to take a poll real quick. What about the Ouya?
Ah, it's a joke, man. I mean, I just don't think there's a place yet for something that expensive. I can't even call it expensive.
Because it's $100.
Yeah, but you can still get like a real console for $200. I mean, they would have to subsidize that hardware to get it into homes, I think, like a cable box or an iPhone.
And the only reason I'm even asking about it is it's kind of the dark horse right now, if you can even consider it to be marginally in the race.
That's like eighth place in a five-horse race.
Well, you know, that sort of made something pop into my mind that we haven't really touched on yet, and that is... you know, up to this point, we've just talked about sort of tabletop games versus electronic, you know, video games. What about the contrast between console games and or PC games and iOS games or Android, you know, phone games? Because I feel like there's been a huge trend upwards in those kind of games. And is that taking away from the console and PC gaming?
Oh, yes, most definitely. I mean, for speaking of the Ouya, or Ouya, how to pronounce it? I forgot.
Ouya. Ouya, I believe.
Yeah. Ouya? They said the reason they wanted to bring that out is because a lot of people are abandoning consoles and getting into casual games and the tablets and the phones. That's the big trend now in that industry, is to get into the casual market. And to, you know, and really, I wouldn't want to be disingenuous to people in the casual market. A game's a game. Have fun. But, you know, compared to the guys who, like, see themselves as hardcore gamers, yeah, there's a big move. Developers and everybody are heading in a different direction now.
I think something that the Ouya, for instance, is missing is I don't have it hooked up in the bathroom.
Right, right.
The only time I play one of those casual games is when I'm a captive.
Yeah, that's true. But, you know, we're a little bit older and we're cut from a different cloth. And I don't have any evidence for this. It's just anecdotal and just what I sense. But is the hardcore gamer, quote unquote, dying off?
I'd like to know the answer to that myself, Cam. I think that taken as a share of the market, perhaps they are. But in terms of raw numbers, real numbers, not so much. I mean, I wonder if the gaming market has expanded to include all of these casual gamers and all the resources are running in that direction because these are newcomers to the market. I find it difficult to believe that a person who plays Call of Duty is now content to play some tablet game.
Well, no, I agree with you 100% that obviously the market has expanded, but if you think generationally, you have all these kids, younger kids that are growing up with tablets and playing tablet games. So is that shaping their perception of what hardcore gaming or what gaming is? As opposed to us, you know, we who grew up with, you know, Atari 2600, Commodore 64, you know, we grew up with consoles right. And Apple II Pluses and 2Es and, you know, gaming on those kind of devices. But, you know, every kid has an iPhone and every kid has an iPad now. So is that shaping it?
I'll answer anecdote with anecdote. My buddy has a kid, and every time I went over there, he'd have that tablet out. He'd be playing some kind of lame-looking like combat game on the tablet. He was all about that tablet, man. Game, game, game. Hey, mom, let me download this. Hey, dad, let me get this. He always wanted, you know, the little upgrades and stuff. He was all about the tablet. My friend got an Xbox One. Actually, even before we got the Xbox One, picked up Destiny. The kid got into Destiny. I haven't seen that stupid tablet since then. So I think that this little kid is a hardcore gamer in the making. He is a very modern, a late model hardcore gamer, I guess you could say. And
I would have to disagree with that to some degree, because I think we might have different definitions of what a hardcore gamer is. I think a lot of guys think that they're the hardcore gamer and they're in their 20s and their 30s. And I don't think that's the hardcore gamer market. I think it's the 12-year-olds. I think that what's happening to that kid is just a natural evolution of where he's going. That's where the hardcore market is. The guys who have no, you know, who has no time but to hang out on games, you know.
You're 100% right, Chris. But let's phrase it this way. Cam and I, and anybody else who wants to claim the title, are traditional gamers. We grew up with all those systems that Cam mentioned. We're still into games. We consume games in much the same way we always have. We're looking for certain experiences from games. Right. The hardcore kid is the kid who has time to play all day. And I can tell you, based on my consistently middling numbers in first-person shooters, that they're still out there, they're still 12, and they still kick the shit out of everyone.
Well, for me, I mean, you're going to get the traditional gamer. Over my lifespan, I've learned three definitions of someone when they say, I'm a gamer. Because growing up, for me, being I'm a gamer meant that you were in your mom's basement rolling dice until you get your own place. Then someone said, oh, yeah, I'm a gamer. Yeah, I play World of Warcraft. I'm like, that's not gaming. You're not a gamer. You're a video game person. I learned I had to readjust my definition. And then, you know, coming down here and living by the casinos, I learned there was another definition of, oh, yeah, I'm a gamer. I love gaming, because then that's the casino.
Oh,
I despise arcade these days.
It's all ticket redemption games. I mean, that's all it is.
Right. You go into a place and it says arcade on it, and I'm expecting at least one video game.
Well, I'm talking about the slots, but, I mean, you know, when you say traditional gamer, I think way back, just, you know, FYI.
Well, I'll say this. The slot gamers, I've seen, my dad enjoys going to the casino when he's down, and I've seen one too many lives, like, hanging by a thread in that place, man. You could tell these people are, like, ready to check out.
All over the place.
Yes, I mean, I hate to say it, but yes.
But, you know, when I said earlier that, like, Las Vegas is looking into, you know, the casual game market and vice versa, this is where it's happening. The slot machines that no longer have slots to them except for your card, they are developing their rhythms and their entertainment to you based on what they're seeing happening in the casual game market, because they see there's money to be made and they're adapting and learning from each other. You know, because of what's happening, I mean, the tables, the blackjack tables are being pushed to the side. The slot machines are taking over because of that.
It's like Candy Crush or Farmville, but it pays.
Yes. And then another interesting bit I read was, you know, you put in $1 and you win 70 cents back, your brain says that's a win because you got some money back. And that's not really a win. You just actually lost 30 cents instead.
I was just about to say, I bet the casinos in particular love that because there's not necessarily any sense of fairness. At least with blackjack, you know, there's either 52 or 104 or however many decks there are in there, a realistic distribution. Those slots, man, they're not mechanical anymore. They can come up with anything anytime. They will not pay off until they've made their money back.
I can't fathom ever putting a penny into a slot machine unless you're doing it purely for entertainment and you know you're going to lose money. I mean, it doesn't make any sense to me, because the simplest algorithm will take your money in the technology that they have in those games now.
Well, I know some people, that is their attitude. This is how I'm going to entertain myself, and instead of spending $40 on dinner and a movie, I'm going to spend it on this little
box
attitude right here.
Is somewhat like that, Chris, except it's more like, I'm here with my dad, he's entertaining himself, I know he likes this, I'm going to grit my teeth and just feed money into this shredder for a while until he's ready to leave.
Oh, I've had friends, they just want an audience. You don't even have to spend money with them. They just say, hey, sit beside me. And maybe once or twice when I feel like my luck is down, why don't you hit the button?
Where's the entertainment value? They call it gaming, but it's just like, I took enough math classes that I would be totally comfortable with just like, you know what? Here's all the money I'm going to bet for the day. Let me plop it in. You do all the calculations. So do individual rolls of the dice and print me out money or a drink voucher when I lose. Let me be done with this in like 3 seconds.
You have no gambling soul.
I don't.
No gambling soul.
It's not fun. No gambling soul. I think it goes back to my philosophy on gaming too. Like, I don't mind losing. I just don't like spending a long time doing it.
If I'm going to lose, let's get it over with.
Right. Like, at a certain point when we're playing tabletop games, like, I can see that I'm not going to win, or the odds of me winning are pretty long. There's nothing at stake. I'm happy to concede defeat and let's move on and play something else. You know, and I
We used to call that the civilization effect because we noticed that in a lot of civilization games. You'd be like, yeah, there's the runaway winner. We can play for another 3 to 4 hours just to confirm he's still going to win, or we can just call him good and move on to something else.
Right. And I feel sometimes like I'm robbing the victor of his glory or his victory, but I'm not. It's kind of pointless at this point. Like, I will totally shake your hand. You won. And that's how I feel about casinos. Like, look, man, just run this money through like a machine and let me know.
Well, you know, the only exception to that, aside from what Brian brought up with blackjack, I mean, that's really the only game where you statistically have some sort of mild edge against the house. The only exception to that is poker, where you're not playing against the house, you're playing against all the other players at the table. So you theoretically could win every single hand. The only money you would lose if you did win every single hand was the rake, that they call it, where, you know, the casino takes a percentage of every pot just because they're hosting the game. But they're not an active participant in the game. And so I don't gamble anymore, but when I did, that was the only game I would ever play is poker, because, you know, at least you know you have some sort of odds on your side.
Poker or Texas Hold'em?
Any type of poker, you know, Omaha, pot limit, what, you know, any type of poker or card game where you're not playing against the casino, you're playing against the other players on the table. That's the only true, I would say, gaming experience that you have any kind of odds in your favor, or could have odds in your favor, depending on what kind of skill you had as a player.
I think that's the popularity of some of the, going all the way back full circle to some of these tabletop games where it's all bluffing and deduction, is it brings that excitement of poker, but kind of takes away the, you know, for what some people is the confusion of trying to track the hands and the possibilities of the cards. They can just focus on the bluffing and the deduction.
Yeah, no, I love those games, and we play a lot of those games on Thursday nights, as you guys well know, and that's half the fun, is seeing, you know, who you can bluff and, you know, who calls you out.
Oh, we know Cam. We know.
When Cam bets his car keys, you know he's not bluffing.
Yeah, I gotta say, I do enjoy the bluffing games, where personal interaction is key, and reading social cues, that sort of thing, which I think kind of puts the final point on this discussion. That's something you can get out of in-person tabletop gaming that you can't get online, is the face-to-face interaction, especially where personalities come in. And I think that we've made a pretty good case for, if not tabletop gaming replacing video gaming, tabletop gaming providing something that video gaming simply cannot, without some awesome VR technology of the future. But you know, guys, our listeners don't have to wait for future VR technology to enjoy entertainment of the Nerdstravaganza variety every week. And I think it's doubly important to stress that we give this sort of entertainment year-round. Here during the holiday season, when it's all about receiving, I think that we stand out as really an example of what it is to give. Don't you agree?
Absolutely.
Oh, of course. So with that said, I will invite all of our listeners to subscribe free of charge to the Nerdstravaganza podcast. And you know what? Maybe drop our link under the tree, or any night if you happen to celebrate Hanukkah. And I'm not exactly sure how Kwanzaa unfolds, but do work us in. And as an alternative, if subscription via iTunes or whatever podcatching software you happen to use does not blow your holiday skirt up, why not dance under the mistletoe as you listen to our podcast via streaming through a solution we call Stitcher.
And if you would like to listen to any of our back episodes, Ganza Claus is giving you the gift of all of them at our website, nerdstravaganza.com. If you like them and you like the show, give us a gift of an email at nerdstravaganza@gmail.com.
Unwrap us on Facebook. Follow us on Twitter and Instagram. Join our Google Circle of Merry Carolers this season. And don't forget the Nerdstravaganza HQ on Facebook.
And remember, listeners, this holiday season, that whether you tabletop game or video game,
Ganza Claus bless us, everyone!
I like how it's also that's also your grumpy cat voice.
Oh, that was great.
Oh man.